sports fail. Jake cut me off. We're going to do it again.
Did not know you're
It is sports fail. We have come to a conclusion to the thing that happened.
The saga.
The rundown. We're going to run the show down quickly.
Yeah.
We have Kawhi heading to the Clippers. Danny Green going to the Lakers. We have Raptors signings.
They weren't going to stand pat.
Pick themselves up and dust themselves off. They're playing summer league. It's midterm time for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Home run derby is tonight.
Definitely July sports time.
Absolutely. It's funny, the Kawhi thing, it's sort of like the first day of summer, the next day.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, right. There's the whole other thing. We have Maple Leafs, we're told. Don Cherry, a mailbag, sad, not sad, and much, much more.
Look at that.
On the way. That was so far the worst rundown I've done, but also the best.
Yeah. Well, it's the first in a way for us.
Anyway, we also have an excellent guest this week.
We do.
We have from TSN, covering NBA, CFL, 2018 Olympics, and the As Told By Essays. Mr. Matthew Schinetti.
No one needs to call me Mr.
Good. That'll be the only time you get it.
Good. Excellent.
Done.
And even excellent, I think, would be a bit of an overestimation, but thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
You were on the street after they won the Game 6.
I will tell you that no experience in my life was as evasive to my personal space as being on the street right at Dundas Square right after they won. And I love how the lasting clip on SportsCenter is, they do the morning loop on SportsCenter, and I believe Kara Wagland throws to me, or they do this segment like, okay, we're going to check with Matthew Schinetti on the street. And they cut one of my hits to basically where just people are jumping on me, just like bodies flying.
There's no training for that. There's no tests.
That was pretty much the experience in the bar, too, to be fair.
Pretty much.
Like, not even on the street. I think everywhere in the
city. I don't think anyone is... it's such a generational thing, literally, in this city, that I don't think anybody fully understood what was going to happen. So spontaneous body movements was to be expected by everybody.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So the slow decrease over the last 3 weeks of confidence in having Kawhi Leonard, is it zero?
Well, now it's at zero. I think it's safe to say.
I'm pretty confident he's not going back.
Yeah, well.
That's a very fair assessment.
But what if? No.
But no. He's gone home. He's gone to the Clippers, which I'm retroactively quite happy about.
Yes, and as it seems like he was always going to do.
Can we just spare a moment and feel happy for the LA Clippers that the greatest moment in their franchise's history, and this is a franchise that's been long maligned, is getting Kawhi Leonard?
Absolutely.
Good for them.
I would say
to be fair,
I would also say that the greatest moment in Raptors history a year ago was getting Kawhi.
Fair enough, but the way I know you guys have referenced guys like Blake Murphy, and I know Blake will dig into the numbers and dig into all the lineups. I don't know if getting Paul George and putting him alongside Kawhi Leonard makes the Clippers in a highly competitive Western Conference the immediate favorite that everyone makes them.
It is not without risk.
It does seem like the top tier of the Western Conference is sort of like they're all sort of at this same level.
100%.
And I have no idea who's going to win it. And that's fantastic.
100%.
There is an interesting, I'm glad you bring that up because there is sort of, they immediately became the Vegas favorites. And I think a lot of people became their betting favorites sort of in their heads. But Paul George is not like a guaranteed. He had a great year. He was a top three MVP candidate, but
led the league. Second in the league.
He's had shoulder surgery. He's had knee surgery. He's had a lot of injuries and is about to turn 30. It's not a guaranteed.
And they need more. And they three titles as the Raptors proved even last year. The Raptors got Kawhi and Danny Green, went into the season with a very strong roster. Still need to add Marc Gasol to really solidify the whole thing. Still need 100%. Pascal to take that next leap. So they need. I'm not confident in saying that, especially in the Western Conference, which, as you say, is very competitive now, even for teams that no one's talking about, like Denver, I think are going to make a real push. And Portland, with now they have Lillard back, they get Nurkic coming back. I am not convinced that the Clippers are, I mean, they could very well make the finals. With the, you know, in the playoffs, we saw Kawhi can make the difference. But are they as strong as
here's a basic thought experiment right now. I want you to list off the top of your head memorable Paul George playoff moments.
They all came against the Raptors when he was in Indiana,
and they still lost that. And I still remember him after they lost Game 7, him praising Norman Powell because Norman Powell shut him down.
Yep.
Right. So, listen, I'm a Paul George fan. I own quite a few pairs of Paul George his trademark sneakers. I do like them. However, Playoff P, as he likes to brand himself, is non-existent.
I am not yet confident in crowning a team whose fifth best player is Lou Williams. Nothing against Lou, but like,
Lou,
come on.
I can't wait for the reception and the reaction that
disrespect
Lou Williams
on Lou Williams. What is this?
Well, when he went ahead and basically said that,
look,
well,
I watched the 2014 Toronto Raptors. Okay?
He was anyway. End of the every quarter, Lou Williams.
Yeah, and then they made what in the playoffs that you need more.
You can't put that on. Anyway,
I'm not. I'm just.
Well, you know, as Lou will
I'm
tell
not
you,
confident they're there.
As Lou will tell you, Toronto's great for 4 months, and then you want to go home. So anyway,
Kawhi did go home.
He did, and from the sounds of the orchestrations of the trade, it sounds like he was always going home. So. Fair enough.
And perhaps he was always going to go home from the moment that he got here and his mind was dead set. And when you speak to the people who've been covering the Raptors all season, they have said consistently over and over again that they were getting no indication that Kawhi was changing his mind. He's a hard guy to read. However, the fact that this whole idea of the Raptors giving him a tough decision, I think Bruce Arthur wrote this in the Toronto Star, that that's maybe the best you could have asked for.
Totally.
Right? You made it a very tough decision for him. And you think about Alex McKechnie, the head of sports science, and what he did for Kawhi and the load management and how they basically, without bending over backwards, how they basically kind of placated Kawhi as much as they could.
I would say that Kawhi and the Raptors organization gave each other everything possible. And that Kawhi came here and he was known maybe that he wasn't coming back and he didn't really want to be here, but he still played his ass off and won a title. And then on the flip side, the Raptors took care of his health. They brought him back to being the superstar he is. And
it's the greatest fling in NBA history.
Yeah.
And all sides benefited from it.
He has, that was pretty much in terms of just Kawhi. If you eliminate, that's pretty much the greatest 1 year turnaround of a guy's reputation I've ever seen in my life.
And maybe a franchise's reputation. Cause right?
he played 9 games. And if you look at the package that he was traded for, versus the package that Paul George was traded for. Paul George is no Kawhi Leonard.
Clippers are screwed and
unbelievable trade.
That's the going price for a guy who is in that conversation. And the Raptors got him for a lot less. They paid, but they didn't mortgage their entire future.
And they won a title.
Like
the whole I think obviously, if they had lost the Warriors or lost the Bucks or lost the Sixers, this whole conversation is very different.
It's very true.
But they won the title. Like, there's nothing more.
And what if Masai Ujiri does bend and he's the one who makes that Paul George and he mortgages the entire future, sends unprotected picks and the right to swap picks and Pascal Siakam and maybe OG, like, all for Paul George?
See, now I am of the opinion that no matter what, that would never have happened.
No,
I feel like even calling, let's say even they do take the call and they say, okay, we'll take Westbrook's contract. And Masai says, yes, we will do that. All Sam Presti is going to do is call the Clippers.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, they're taking Westbrook, so 100%. You have to take Westbrook.
And,
so,
it sounds like Kawhi, even if they make that deal, Kawhi wasn't going to stay anyway. Yeah. So
He was able to, looking back at it now and reverse engineering it and everything we convinced ourselves of and heard, the thing that came up a lot was that Kawhi was testing teams and their ability to not leak and their ability to stay quiet. And with that knowledge and hindsight, you have to say bravo to the Clippers because not only did they make it, you know, they didn't leak, they made it seem like they were out.
They made it known without making it known. Like, they made it very clear they wanted Kawhi. They weren't Kawhi. Lawrence Frank was coming to Raptors games all the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a secret, but the actual machinations of the deal were like, when that happened, it was like
out of nowhere.
What?
And the
it was
and
crazy.
For the last week, basically all the talk was he's down to Raptors and Lakers.
It does.
Knowing that he was calling half the league and
I have to assume most of the leaks in the last couple weeks were all the Lakers, which speaks to reason why he didn't go to the Lakers.
That speaks to everything Magic Johnson said about how dysfunctional the Lakers are, right?
Pretty impressed by the Clippers, not going to lie.
I also think...
Greatest week in Clipper history.
Yeah, for sure. How could it not be? But like, and also in the frame of Kawhi and Raptor fans, I think... I've seen a lot of being thrown around about how ruthless the whole thing was, which is true. But as Raptor fans, we just spent last summer being like, man, what a ruthless trade. That's amazing. When we trade Kawhi for DeMar, you can't say one is ruthless and it sucks and one is ruthless and it's great when it works out for you.
Yeah, I said this on Twitter that a lot of the reaction kind of really crystallized to me the best and worst of Toronto sports fans, which often happens at every situation when it comes to Toronto sports. you know, you have fans, some fans implying that they're not going to wear their championship gear. Other fans saying he shouldn't have his jersey retired or any stature or anything. It's like, guys, this team is still the NBA champions. Like, yeah. Anything. And even if Kawhi had stayed for that 1-1, there was a good possibility come 2020 with the majority of those contracts coming off the books and really Norman Powell being the only guy that you have signed long term, that ultimately this was going to be a short ride anyway.
Yeah, I think based on how it went down, Kawhi was only ever coming back for one more year if he was coming back at all, which fair. But I think, yeah, this idea that because the Kawhi watch happened so quickly after the finals win, we weren't really able to bask in it. And I think that has lost perspective on some people because we weren't able to be like, yeah, we're champions. That being said, I also think it's just sports fandom in general to be like, oh, this guy left, so fuck him. And right. It's just, I get it, but it's also, it's stupid. Like, we're champions. He gave us literally the only thing you play the game to do.
I don't think Toronto sports fans have ever been mistaken for being all that rational anyway, so.
Fair point.
But it is, to your point, Jake, about the championship being the whole point. If you look at what the Clippers give up for Paul George, everyone says, well, that's a huge thing. You do it to win a championship.
Yeah.
Winning the championship is the whole point.
And look, if the Clippers win the title next year and Kawhi brings a title in back-to-back years to the Raptors and the Clippers, he's like the fourth greatest player of all time.
And
like
so, and fair point, especially I think he would be the only guy if he were to win another finals MVP to win it on
three different teams. Yeah.
Think about, what was it, the shot game four against the Sixers, right? That shot at the elbow over the three. Embiid. Game seven, game three and four in Milwaukee. Think about all those moments when you trying to deal with your emotions about Kawhi leaving. Because if any of those moments go the other way, nothing of what transpired, the magical run to the championship, nothing happens.
And to that point, I think a thing that is making this difficult, because I had this thought a couple times as well, even though I'm fine with it, is that the run that we just experienced was special and fun. And maybe, as a Raptors fan, literally once in a lifetime. But it was all those memories. Like, I got to watch this run with, like, my fiance before this didn't give a shit about sports. She got super into it. We got to experience the Raptors winning a championship together. I had friends who never gave a shit about sports and got to experience this. And we had this great, amazing time. Like, what Ennis was saying when he came on the show about community and what it did for the city and the country in some respects and all that, that doesn't go away. That still happened. And Kawhi is the reason for it. And so I think I get there being disappointment that next season, those emotions and those experiences probably don't happen. And I get that, but it still did. You know what I mean? Like, so it's
15 million people may never watch a single sporting event in this country ever again.
Yeah. Possible. Right? It's half the fucking country.
Okay, and let's also with just a sprinkle of optimism, who knows how good Pascal Siakam can actually be?
The Raptors are a three seed right now.
Who knows how good OG Anunoby could end up being? This is obviously trying to calculate whether or not Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol stay and Serge Ibaka stay for the duration of the season, but if they do, this is still a very competitive team in the East. Right? So don't sleep on the Raptors. They're not championship quality. I get it, but don't sleep on them.
I think you can make a very strong case that they are the third or fourth best team in the conference right now.
I don't disagree.
So we do move forward. Danny Green, by the way, also left.
Yes.
Way to go, Danny.
Yeah. Thanks, Danny.
We move forward. That leaves your whole and small forward and shooting guard filled now by Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. We have Terrence Davis, and we're hearing Pat McCaw will be back. So there's bodies. A lot of those guys have similar qualities in that they are plus defenders who cannot shoot a lick.
It's
going to be the strategy going.
They're also all very much Ujiri Webster type guys, like young guys who kind of crashed
the player
out.
Development test.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'll give you guys a bit of insight. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to go into what is now called the OVO Center, but the great thing about the way that Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster operate is when they did an orientation, they took the media through the entire facility and they brought us into their war room. And their war room has this enormous tablet basically situated on a table with constantly movable depth charts, right? iterations of lineups that they have pondered in their heads, right? Ways to play, and that actually, and I could be getting this wrong, but actually factor in the salary cap, the luxury tax, and so that they can plug and play pieces. And obviously they didn't show us what their, you know, everything on their depth chart looks like, but the concept being that that all of these moves that you've seen weren't by accident.
Right.
Right. That Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri this was their contingency plan, that they knew that they had scoped out the landscape. And if Kawhi wasn't coming back, they had already probably earmarked some of these guys to say, the personality of our team will be defensive. There will be a lot of energy. We're not going to be scoring as much or moving as with a kind of deadly purpose on the break as we did in the previous season, but we're still going to be incredibly tough to beat.
Yeah. I mean, like, these guys aren't, like you said, they can't shoot. Like, Hollis Jefferson shoots 22%. Stanley Johnson shoots 30% from threes. I saw someone call them a no 3-and-D guys, which I think is accurate. But Stanley Johnson was an eighth overall pick like 4 years ago.
A bad pick, though.
But
a bad eighth overall pick.
But you can...
Sure.
I'm not saying he's an eighth overall guy.
You can be like, Darko was a third overall pick.
I guess so. But I still think it's very Ujiri to like say, okay, let's
totally. See. Totally. It's what we call in baseball a post-hype sleeper.
Yeah.
23 and 24, these guys, it's draftable ages. You're right. Absolutely. I don't want to put...
I'm not going to say he's going to develop into an eighth overall
pick. It's hard to put... You want to keep that line of like, you trust the player development, but you also don't want to put too much on Stanley Johnson.
No. And if the goal of this year...
If he gives you 12 good minutes, 15 good minutes, you're happy.
And if the goal of this year is to be sort of transitional and, you know, make a run at the 3-4 seed if they decide to keep all the vet guys. And, you know, these are the kind of signings you make to do that with the knowledge that that's probably all they're going to get you.
Very interesting year coming up, I think, for the fan base.
Yes.
Because...
I'm curious.
Because your tone is 100% correct. You're both very, very right that... 3-4 seed, but like, what does a fan base that had just won a title, like, what is it going to take to care about anything really this year?
I'm curious,
because everybody sort of knows what the ceiling is, and that I think one of the side effects of winning the title is getting a glimpse of what an elite talent and what championship talent looks like. And now that you know what it is, we all sort of know that this isn't it.
There's always going to be regression to the mean, right? And
for sure,
the way I see the atmosphere inside the Scotiabank is going to be different from outside, because it's long been the perception that the real Raptors fans are the ones that kind of sit outside, the ones in Jurassic Park, the ones on the message boards, the ones always engaging in the team. And I think for the most part, they will understand what this team is. Now, how you market the team is going to be different, right? It's going to be great to market those jerseys with that lovely championship, you know, little tab that they have on the back that the NBA does. And I believe they also do like an actual they'll have those commemorative jerseys for the first game with the Larry O'Brien. Like, everything's going to be good from that perspective. But I don't know if there's going to be a dip inside Scotiabank, because they're not, like, the circus is gone. Like, the circus isn't in town anymore. And now you're going to have to watch a lot of players gritting it out every night. And this is going to be real. This is now going to be a real test of Nick Nurse's coaching abilities. We saw a tremendous amount of what he did in playoff situations, you know, besides boxing one. But this is going to be a real test of how he kind of fits all these pieces and doesn't have that transcendent talent that he can just put out there in certain situations.
Yeah. I feel like I agree with you. Like, in the building, the Raptors have always sold well. The Raptors have been dog shit and sold well. Like, they,
but the tickets are not going to be as what they were. They're going to be a little more expensive now.
That is true. I am curious if they will have a little bit of what's going on with the Blue Jays. And that, obviously, it's different because they won. But the Jays fan base, who wasn't accustomed to success, had 2015 and 16. And now they are what they are. The Raptors aren't going to be that bad. So there's a little bit of difference there. But I wonder if the casual fan base will start to not necessarily turn on the team, but if the great groundswell of 15 million people watching a game, I mean, obviously that will go down, but if it will revert to, you know, 2017, or if it's going to be like the Bosch Bargnani years.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I do remember that Milwaukee series, because I covered it in 2017, and I distinctly remember there being... It was different because this one, momentum had built up. The previous year, they got to the Eastern Conference Final, and they're facing Milwaukee. And that first usually those first games, those Raptors runs in 2015, 2016, like you could feel the energy in the building. It was pulsating, even 2014. But it was like almost like they were expecting success. They were expecting, we need to get to that next step. Okay, so we saw the energy, obviously, in all those key moments that I've already mentioned, and every little bell that had to be hit en route to winning a championship. I think there will be an emotional letdown. It's only natural. I mean, everyone's only a human being, and sports fans being as fickle as they are, especially in this city, there is going to be a bit of an emotional dip. However, I still think Masai Ujiri has got a couple moves up his sleeve. So I'm not implying that there's going to be some huge, you know, Kawhi Leonard-esque trade. But I think if he feels this team can compete, especially in the East, I don't put it past Masai and Bobby Webster to do something.
I expect a Gasol deal at the very least.
100%.
That's the one that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But if they go the other way and they're not good,
yeah.
Well, then remember the one thing, Masai has won a championship. He's traded away with the face of the franchise. He's added his own coach. The one thing he hasn't done is a full rebuild.
And he had it pegged basically the entire time.
Well, remember,
2014, we're ready.
Right, if the Knicks accept Kyle Lowry, yep. Everything is different. And you know, maybe they take Andrew Wiggins, which is
please don't. Please don't.
Anyway, but that's the one thing Masai hasn't done yet. Masai has not done the full rebuild, and he is as ruthless and as pragmatic a sports executive as I have interacted with, and he has, as we have seen, obviously with DeMar, he has no emotions. He's great. He loves the fact they'll have a championship ring, but he wants more, and very Machiavellian of him. He will do whatever he can to go ahead and build more power.
Now, we talk about that ruthlessness when you talk about the NBA, but doesn't there have to be a line somewhere? Don't you have to be like,
are you calling the line Kyle Lowry?
Can you really trade Kyle Lowry before opening night, before he gets his ring? Can you really do that?
No.
Because like,
I mean, yes, but no.
Because even to that point of ruthlessness, like how much are you gaining?
He fired a coach before that coach won Coach of the Year.
But now they have one, right? It's different.
Yeah.
Coach of the Year and losing in the first round versus just won a title. Fair enough. You know?
I don't think he will.
Yeah.
I think if there's a guy who would, like if a deal came on the table.
Yeah.
That was like, we can become a title contender, but we got to go up Kyle Lowry. But I also not sure that deal exists. Kyle Lowry is getting older, but he is still a premium player at a weak position in the league.
I wonder what the fan reaction would be. I mean, I really do, because Kyle,
I think it depends on the return.
I think you're right, because I'm speaking purely in the emotional sense here, not in the obvious X's and O's depth chart sense, but Kyle Lowry has grown, and to his credit, he's done a lot to become literally the face of the heart, the soul, the face, whatever adjective you want to use.
He's the greatest Raptor of all time now,
and that's simply up. That is a definite debate to have. But I think if you're Masai, if there's a way that you can see, whether getting picks or you know multiple team trades to benefit this team going forward, his line has always been: we will win in Toronto. We have won in Toronto, and we will continue to win in Toronto.
And like last year, there was like 3 weeks there where everyone was pissed about the Kawhi trade.
Oh, I was well aware of that.
There was a lot of like, can't believe the trade DeMar, like he doesn't want to be here, blah, 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 blah. And Masai said, okay, but we have Kawhi Leonard, basically. And that was the correct answer. So I do think if he were to trade Kyle Lowry before opening night, which I don't think he will, but if he were, there would still be that reaction, and Masai's reaction would still be tough shit.
He's not sentimental at all.
No. And the reaction I think would be somewhat justified.
I don't believe that he's not sentimental at all.
I think it's ML, but like he knew,
I don't know how you can watch him winning, watch Kyle lift that trophy and be like, eh.
But he'll rank winning over sentimentality.
I don't necessarily, I'm not talking about, and I go back to the term I use and being Machiavellian. He will go ahead, if he looks at this whole cloth and says, this is how we can win based upon the moves, and I've thought this through, then this is what we're going to do. He could have made moves around DeMar and around Kyle and said, okay, we're going to give it one more shot now that LeBron's out of the East, right? He could have done that.
Sure.
But he said no. To your point, obviously, no one had that visceral expression on their face that literally you could read his lips say, wow, as Lowry's lifting the Larry O'Brien trophy like Ujiri did in Oakland. I still think that he's the kind of guy. I'm not calling him a prick. I'm not calling him anything other than the fact that
pragmatic
should have been the executive of the year.
Yes.
Yeah. I just think if he sees an opportunity, he's going
to
take it.
I will say this on fan reaction to Lowry or a Lowry trade.
Mm-hmm.
DeMar was tough for the fan base, but easy to swallow because it was for Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
If Lowry is traded for a piece to contend this year, everyone will get over it. If Lowry is traded for a rebuilding trade, that will be a tough
one. It'll have to be a rebuilding trade.
Yeah, but
who is acquiring Kyle Lowry and getting rid of a star?
So it would be tough.
The
I've thought about this. I don't see any team that
he makes like $30 million. He's 34 years old. It's just like not going to happen.
Yeah, no one's going to go ahead and say, "Yeah, here's an unprotected pick," and you know.
Yeah, and ultimately, what this run proved again is you want to win the title, have the best player on the floor. But basically, they did that every series, and that's what carried them to.
The NBA is a star-driven league. Full stop.
And nobody's. You saw the price for Paul George, and he's not even elite. I just don't see it. I hope if you are going to trade Lowry, which I'm okay with eventually, you can't do it before opening day. That's just
insane. I agree with that. I also think Masai might try to swing for the fences again.
Marc Gasol, I can see being traded. There is that other side, right? There's the side of like, yes, we are assuming that Anunoby will improve, and we don't know what Siakam's ceiling is. But you have to also factor in that Lowry and Ibaka and probably Gasol, there's a couple guys that you think are probably going to get a little worse, right?
Yep.
It's not the whole team isn't about to.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question I have for both of you. Is Fred VanVleet ready to be the.
We're about to find out, baby.
I don't know. Genuinely, I have
that
no
is
idea.
Sort of the fun of the year. We have the VanVleet question. I really want to see Anunoby. I really want to know what that is because there's an intriguing piece there.
And have we seen the ceiling on Norman Powell? We know he can play the Bucks really well.
This is the year.
we know that.
He has that one week every year where he's the best basketball player on the planet, and then the rest is kind of a question.
I go back to that moment when Paul George gave him so much props in 2016, and you think about those key moments in that series, and yet since then. There hasn't been, there's been injuries, obviously, but there hasn't been consistency for Norman Powell. So I really want to see him. I want to see if he's got more to give.
I'm just going to throw a name out there. I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's probably not. But I'm
Why
just
going
to
Go
say
ahead.
In February, it would not surprise me if Bradley Beal is on the Toronto Raptors.
Wow.
It's an expiring contract. It's a guy who can take a team to the next level in a conference that's not decided.
Is that with or without Kyle Lowry?
With.
Okay.
I'm suggesting basically adding Beal to the existing roster.
Well, and that, and the, you know, taking Bradley Beal out of the toxic environment that is the Washington Wizards and away from
picks,
John Walls.
Maybe for Norman Powell, maybe for OG Anunoby. I'm just saying.
I don't think Masai gives up OG.
I don't think that's the move. He's not like what tier do you have Bradley Beal at as a player in the league?
Bradley Beal will tell you he's in that top tier, but he's
not. I would say he's not as far off from Paul George as people think.
Okay, but you have to. But Paul George was added to Kawhi, right? I can see why Bradley Beal. I'm just a thing has changed
it
now. Where
it
if you're
doesn't
just making
the
moves, if you're just making moves to go from four to second without like. Right.
That's fair.
That's sort of where head is. Like, that's why with the Lowry trade, it's like if you're going to move.
Just eat it for 2 years and then take a run at someone
if
like Giannis.
If you're going
instead.
Up two slots, like, what are you really doing here? It's got to be a way to get a superstar.
Do you put Bradley Beal on the same platform as CJ McCollum?
Yeah.
I also don't think like the Blazers are going to win the title.
But
CJ McCollum is also the Blazers' number three guy.
That very, very, very true. But
it's going to be a good NBA year.
It is. It's going to be fun. The like expectation, we spent like 10 years of certainty in the NBA.
The West
is going to
be
great.
The West is always so fun to watch in the regular season.
And the regular season is going to mean nothing. It's going to be amazing. LeBron's going to play like 20 games. So is Kawhi.
And I always love every time we get to like Christmas Day and everyone's talking up James Harden. And then nothing gives me more pleasure than watching him just remind everybody who James Harden really is in the playoffs.
Speaking of Christmas Day, do the Raptors still get
they
a game?
Better.
Yeah, I think so. I think at this point,
if you're the NBA, if you're reigning NBA champion,
you go Raptors Clippers.
You might go Clippers. This is the old Blake would say, "Why give away a premium game?"
But yeah,
that's going to be a big game no matter when.
True.
That might be when I do Raptors Bucks. I don't know. Anyway, going to be a really good NBA year. I can't remember a year where I had less assurance as to who was going to win the title.
I feel like the last even the year when like the in 2004 when the Pistons won, everyone thought the Lakers. It was still. that was a surprise, but it wasn't a certain, like the Lakers were the certainty and then it was a surprise. So I'm trying to think of the last year where it was sort of
it's been a long ass time.
Open.
It's been a long ass time.
Yeah, well, again, it all has to do with when dynasties fall, right?
Yeah.
Where that usually corresponds with
Spurs,
when dynasties
Heat, Warriors.
When dynasties fall, there's a sea change. So
it's good stuff.
We switch gears tonight. The big boys are cranking homers.
That's right.
Jake's love dingers.
You gotta love the long ball, baby. our Blue Jays are a little past the halfway point. Most people, I think, in their right minds, have watched less Blue Jays games than ever before.
Yeah,
which is you are totally valid to do. I am not one of those people. I've seen far too many games, but it's a blessing. Here's the thing: they've sneakily been pretty fun for the last 2 weeks.
Sneaky.
They can hit.
I mean, Gurriel might be a thing.
I think Gurriel is a thing in the outfield. Kevin Biggio is a pleasure to watch every day.
Yes,
pleasure to watch every day.
Do you think that they? The Jays have, and I kind of watch the Jays out of the corner of my eye.
It's the best way to do it.
Do you see the long term plan with the prospects? Do you see a path forward yet?
I can see the hitting. I can see you know, Guerrero being comfortable basically for the next 10 years, and I can see now that I've seen BGO playing, he's going to stick at the level. He has the demeanor where nothing really gets him rattled. I'm a believer in Gurriel.
Love that chase rate.
Absolutely. He knows the strike zone, and which is hard to do at the major league level. And for as much as they have a team full of like wild young guys who are really intense and they swing really hard, and he's the exact opposite of that, and it stands out. And I think that makes him going to be a really important piece. There's just baseball teams. There's just so many goddamn.
Well, we talked about this last week.
It takes
week,
so
right?
many like goddamn guys.
Even if all these guys hit, there's still 20, 15,
there's still
20,
20 guys
away.
Left. So it's very hard. I can see. Also, like maybe swinging some moves. Like maybe Gurriel is a showcase and move. Maybe Teoscar Hernandez is you play him in center field and move him. There's a lot of movement still to go. If you want to take it back to like the Raptors sort of callery, they're just past their. They're coming up on their Rudy Gay trade, is how I feel.
Yeah.
Wow. So we're 2013 Raptors, yeah. Right?
100%. They're a long way away. Yeah. They're a long way away.
I think we talked this last week a little too, but the dream or the idea that, you know, we'd suffer through 2017, 2018, and then in 2020, things start coming together. I think
that's not
push happening. That. Like, well, there's
not, baseball is a very interesting timeline. I always think about what the Astros did, right? In kind of their timeline, but they try to accelerate it by being really bad and yeah. then. Mm-hmm. Accumulating a ton of picks, a ton of prospects, and then have built some kind of sustainability. I think that there's, and I take a look at, we talked about the fan base here and, you know, being in sports media and seeing it from different perspectives, seeing attendance and seeing TV ratings and seeing all of that. I think a longer timeline will hurt given the investment that Rogers Media has put in, and I'm not, again, full disclosure, now I'm not saying that because they're a main competitor of the network I work for. I just think there's going to have to be, and that's why I was asking you, because I think there needs to be a crystallized timeline, because you can't have 9,600 people to, or 12,900 people, you know, consistently in the Rogers Center. Like they've got
Can't they kind of did it for 15 years.
Again, but this is now, they're now owned by a media company that has invested heavily in hockey for the next 7 years, where all of those properties aren't doing very well, right? So this is going to be prospect driven. This is going to be, I don't foresee a huge splash or a big trade or like, this is going to be, and that timeline can either, you know, be relatively quick or can be a lot longer.
Yeah, they're not about to acquire a star. I would say that's a guarantee. Like they're gonna hope to spin Giles and probably Stroman into four or five pieces, and hope that two of those pieces they're gonna keep trying to do that. Right?
When does that trade happen? Because like that's
in the next 2 weeks. It's coming.
Deadline's what, 31st?
Yeah.
Because that Stroman thing has been one of the most fascinating things this season. I mean, you're right. When the Jays win, they're fun to watch. When they lose, it's like
brutal.
They either beat teams and look great, or they lose and it's terrible.
Stroman's a much tougher asset to assess than I think we think he is.
Yeah. I could see him being a guy who, I could see it going either way. You know, like I could see him getting traded to a competitor, and he's either going to, and either being like, oh wow, this guy's way better than we thought he was, or being like, wow, he's like, maybe he was the guy on a bad team and in a good system for him. and then just getting fucking shelled.
It's hard.
I genuinely don't know.
He's a hard one to look at objectively because we had him as sort of a savior when he was rehabbing that injury in 2015, and then he really looked like he took a step back, and now he looks like he's back to his form, but he's always sort of battled injury, and I know that there is a very large and sizable and reasonable size of fan base that says extend him and bring him back, and I totally get it. But part of me is also like, we're not super far off from him having two pretty bad years in a row.
Yeah.
And going into his eight, like, are you going to lock, you're locking up through 35? I don't know. It's like, I can, not that I'm advocating against it, but I can see why it isn't as much of a slam dunk as some people want to say that it is.
I agree. But I also think that, you know, looking at him and Ken Giles, who is, I think, much more of a surefire
Giles is getting traded.
Hit. But it's just like, at what point, I know where they're far away, but at what point do you just decide to keep good players?
Right. For sure. I don't think Giles, I agree with that on Stroman, but I can see why you wouldn't be super eager to lock him up for the next 5 years. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all. They should extend him, but just for that very window. If the window is 2022, he should still be a part of it.
That's it, right? But if the window is, you know, 2025, 2026, then...
Right. This could be quietly telling you that the window is much farther away than you think it is.
Baseball money is, as we're seeing with Bryce Harper, though, baseball money is funny money, man.
Yeah.
Lee doesn't want to pay anybody, so...
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I think he'll get traded somewhere and then re-up with that team. That's my prediction.
What will happen
to Stroman? He'll go to like the Yankees and they will J.A. hap him up.
Yeah. I can see that. 34 and 57, man. That's actually somehow not as bad as I thought they were.
They're very close to an 100 loss team. That's very, they're going to need a little run here.
And they're not the worst team in the division.
They're not. And they're not even really close to being the worst team in the league, which is the reality of the Houston approach is that it is less feasible now than it was.
Yes.
A short while ago, because now every team is like, oh, we can just tank for picks. 10 teams tanking for picks means someone's getting 10th overall pick. boy. But now it's summer. Here's the thing about the Blue Jays is now
you can go.
You don't even have a reason to care about your phone. Kawhi's done.
It's true.
The Raptors' moves are going to be tax threshold wing guys who can't shoot.
And the Jays are into that part of the year where like nothing matters. You can just go sit in the sun, watch a baseball game.
I was
going
to say that the only reason you're going is because you want to just be in the sun at the ballpark.
And watch some baseball and then be like, okay.
Anyway, I have a good feeling about a show from Vladimir Guerrero today. I think he's going to have a good
evening. Think he's going to hit some baseballs.
And when he's looked good, he's looked really, and you know what I do love watching, you know, his dad would always just swing at everything at the plate, but watching him and him learning his craft at the major league level at the plate has been pretty good to watch.
The reason I have faith in his home run derby ability is his ability to
his
like
BP is just...
Yeah. I mean, all those guys are going to have good BPs, but he has a way of it just sort of clicks. You sort of see it in 3-point shooters where like once he gets the range, it's just like it becomes like a metronome where he just sort of and he doesn't really have to muscle up and like really overdo himself to hit home runs. He really naturally flicks them. So I have good faith that he'll have a good, maybe he won't win it, but I think.
I hope he does. I think it'd be
in the
I
first
think it'd
round.
Be, he we might like kind of touched on this last week. I think it'd be good for him and his career if he had a good show tonight and then just like can kind of take that, focus on the rest of the season.
I give him props for doing it. Like I give him props for a 20-year-old to step up and say, you know what? I grew up on this stage, watch my dad. I'm not overawed by his shadow. I'm not overawed by what this competition means, how it's the centerpiece of, it really is a centerpiece of All-Star Weekend. I'm going to go up and I'm going to hit some dingers. I love it.
It's going to be fun.
Vince Carter moment, perhaps.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think maybe he doesn't win it, but I think in one of his early rounds, he'll hit like 20 and he'll be like, ooh, damn.
And you know, the ones he hits are going to go.
Effortless bombs.
So far.
Effortless bombs. More Toronto sports news, just rolling in.
Yeah.
The guys who were traded into this city last time we talked have been extended. 4 years, $14 million for Alex Kerfoot, and 1 year, $4.5 million for Cody Ceci. Cody Ceci, everybody I follow that talks about hockey is pretty sure Cody Ceci's bad.
Yeah.
So
I
wouldn't dare watch Ottawa.
I was in Ottawa last week, and they're glad he's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's what I heard from Ottawa fans this weekend as well.
That's how you know it's a good trade, because these fans were happy to get rid of Zaitsev.
Yeah.
But when both teams are like, thank God that guy's gone, that's how you know you're
at least CC's right. Only a year, and then it's like, okay.
Yes. Alex Kerfoot, though, is sticking around.
I mean, he's a young guy. He could be something of a thing. I don't know.
It's hard to say, right?
It really is.
I can sit here and say that I love the Colorado Avalanche, because that would be false.
And also, evaluating the bottom six on an NHL team when you're, it's just like, Maybe. Some of them could be. Sure.
It's so funny when looking at the Leafs, and we talked about this just a little bit with the Raptors. I haven't watched the Leafs. I mean, I don't cover them as much as I used to, but I watch quite a bit. To me, they still, like, I know they can score goals, and that doesn't matter to me. And hockey in February is very tough to watch. But I still want to see how all these pieces fit into a Babcock system in which Babcock can actually adapt and change. And it's not just about, okay, boys, just work harder tonight.
I think that's the question, right? Is it can, I think this year is going, assuming Marner comes back, which we'll get to that. But I think this is going to be the year where that question of can a Babcock system exist on a Dubas team? And yep. And are those two, I have no idea if there's actually a rift between them, and frankly, I don't give a shit. Right. But like, are those two, from a philosophical hockey standpoint, diametrically opposed?
Well, there was always that question, that rumblings around, because Dubas is so invested in analytics and quite intelligent in terms of how he looks at the game from a numbers perspective, and because Babcock is, you know, always been kind of considered that kind of institutional guy who's all about, you know, okay, boys, in the corners, let's sticks on the ice, get in front of the net, bodies on bot. Like, I want to see that moment that we've seen out of the Bruins, that we saw, definitely saw out of the Blues, where he adapts and he changes because of the situation, knowing the talent that he does or he doesn't have. And there's no doubt of what Mike Babcock is, but regardless of the talent that they bring in or they try to insulate, whether it's the top six, whether it's, you know, your top three or four defensemen, it's going to come down. This is a really important year for Mike Babcock. I know we haven't even touched on Marner, but this is a huge year for Mike Babcock.
Absolutely.
If they crash out again, he's gone, I think.
Yeah.
Crazy. We can touch on Marner. Marner is still at large.
He's signing.
I feel confident he's signing, but I also was on record saying Kawhi was coming back. So
that's fair.
Pretty dumb.
I feel like
I'm on actually national television saying that Kawhi was coming back. So I'm it's okay. You
fair
know
enough.
What?
I think we all got a little fooled. But like, I don't know. Marner's, the whole thing is kind of funny to me, in the sense that like the fan opinion of Marner is either he's the greatest winger of all time, bring him back, but also he's not worth more than $8 million.
It is without a doubt the worst part of Leaf fandom.
Yeah.
Has come out in this Marner.
Absolutely.
It happened almost like, almost too predictably that it makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because people are like, fuck him now, which is like,
fuck him now, but also, super ridiculous. But also he's so good and we need him, but
just
also
like the team is scoring
underpaying.
But I also, yeah. This is the one negotiation I want to hear, because everything that Kyle Dubas has said in the media, he said he's a superstar. He has said every word and spoken to every important element that Marner brings to the Leafs that an agent wants to hear in negotiations. So where is the stalemate? When does he, like, how does he aggressively analyze Mitch Marner and basically say, well, we're not going to pay him this?
I mean, last year with Nylander, it was Nylander's camp had a large ask and Dubas wasn't willing to fully meet it. I assume this is the same situation.
But this is now legitimately Marner can ask that, and you know,
yeah,
he's gonna get it. I mean,
is he gonna get, though? Like, he is. I agree. I do think he's a superstar, but he's also a winger. And you know, Austin Matthews can command $11 million as a superstar center. I feel like a superstar winger maybe can't. There's just more of them.
And on the other side of it, because we're at that threshold, and I don't know how many picks it would be, but we're at that threshold because he's at the top half of what would an offer would be. Does he really want to go to a team that's going to basically mortgage his entire future to give him?
That is the question for me.
Yeah, I don't necessarily, like, that's the rock in the hard place. It's like Dubas has got to pay a lot of money, and Marner doesn't want to go to a really, really crappy team.
Yeah.
That's the bluff that they're assuming is called, right? That any team that offers Sheets you is going to be worse than we are. That we are
a lot worse.
I think it's fair to say that the Leafs are in the top tier of the league right now.
Yes.
And then, like, even if it's Montreal who are on their way back up, they're still like nowhere even close to where the Leafs are right now. And then the question I think for Dubas is, you know, we just did the whole rebuild thing. Do we want to get a bunch more picks and pause this a little bit and
And how would Babcock feel about that?
Yeah.
Because Babcock, he lived through, this entire city lived through that horrible year before Austin Matthews came.
That's right.
And does he want to go ahead and say, okay, well, now I'm in my fifth or sixth year of this contract. Okay, let's do this again. I don't think so.
I think Marner signed before opening night.
I think that is the big takeaway from Nylander, was to get it done before games are played.
Yeah.
Because even Nylander came out and was like, well, that sort of screwed me. And I regret it. Both sides said they regretted it.
Yeah.
Right? Both sides were very candid and like, that wasn't great for our season. I can't see learning that lesson and coming forward and being like, well, let's wait until whatever it is, December again.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of conversation Nylander had with his reps and his dad after the fact.
It's like funny, after this another whole, dad and reps situation, right?
It's always
hockey now.
the world of hockey and hockey parenting and all that. Far be it for me to go ahead and give my opinions on fathers and sons, but as I think, you know, sometimes it's great to have the boat away from the dock in some situations.
Well said.
Very well put. I think that more or less sews up our Maple Leafs talk. I guess the question is, do you actually think a offer sheet is coming?
No.
Because Sebastian Aho got one.
Yeah, and it fucked them.
A bad one.
And that's it.
Yeah, but that was a weird play by Mark Bergevin. Super weird. Like,
apparently he also offered one to Point and he didn't sign it. Because Braden Point wants to stay. I think Braden Point is a better comparable than Aho, because Braden Point wants to stay with Tampa
Bay. Like, I don't understand how Sebastian Aho's agent didn't go to Mark Bergevin and say, okay, we have a sense that the Canes are going to go ahead and meet to this threshold. You might want to go ahead and push it to this.
I don't know why Aho would even have signed that.
No,
I don't. And
Canes
and,
got a gift.
And for him to walk into that locker room now with Rod Brind'Amour after Mark Bergevin said, oh yeah, well, Aho wants to be here. That's why he's okay with this offer sheet. And knowing the kind of culture that they've tried to build in Carolina. But as a quick aside, you know, and obviously watching all the coverage on free agency, knowing that had they tried to offer that offer sheet or anything more, it would have cost them their entire gate revenue for last season.
Wow.
That was what the scuttlebutt was. It shows you how thin the margins are in those fringe hockey markets.
Yeah. I think the only one I can see somebody, because the Maple Leafs cap situation is they're fairly tight. I can see someone finding out what number puts them over the cap and offering that, right? If it's crazy, but you at least you put
again, that's going to be a bad team. That's going
to for sure.
Yeah,
people are saying maybe Lou, maybe which.
Well, there was that. Yeah,
go ahead and do it, Lou.
Yeah, there was those tweets. There were those tweets out last week,
crazy
right?
Old man.
Yeah, and he would do it.
He would absolutely do it.
100%. Absolutely, 100% do it to get back at Kyle Dubas. Anyway,
well, I feel like a mailbag. You guys feel like a mailbag?
Let's do a mailbag.
We're gonna wrap this up. An excellent potpourri of topics we just hammered through.
Potpourri, very nice.
And now we're going to open up a little more levity. We have some light mailbag questions on the way after this. It's mailbag time. We have great questions. And the first one is a follow-up to last week's episode.
Hey, I love to see that.
Wherein I made my stance that I don't believe that every fingerprint in the world is unique. One of my takes that is I no longer believe that every fingerprint in the world is different. That's not true. I just think that's something to tell you.
They look really
bullshit,
similar.
Bullshit. Like, right? Like, bullshit. There are billions of people in the world. Look at how big your thumb is. There's no way.
Yeah,
there's like,
you know what?
20 billion different.
Is this our new like gematria thing?
100%.
Like, fingerprints are actually not.
Because the thing that people equate it to is every snowflake is unique. Bullshit.
No, it's not. Bullshit. That one is bullshit. That there's one is no absolutely way that's bullshit. True. I can see them. They look exactly the same.
There's no way that's true.
I just watched a documentary about that, actually. Huh. Now, Vox did a whole thing. Okay, well, I don't know if I can actually plug Vox. But anyway, they did a whole thing about fingerprints. And yeah, it's not as... They're not as unique as you might think. They
there you
are.
Go.
Yes,
you did it.
They
blew this puppy open.
Vindicated,
because they've had cases where they're like, oh yeah,
of course.
This looks like the same kind of etchings and patterns. And
how could it not be?
Yeah, then all of a sudden, and those cases fall apart. You know, over actual verifiable science and time.
So the question is, if fingerprints and snowflakes aren't unique, is there anything in the world that actually is?
Wow.
This show, baby.
I've heard that the length of the bones in your hand is a very unique.
Really?
Just the...
Well, I got the short end of the stick there with this stumpy fucking piece of shit.
Just the different... Because there are so many bones in your hand, right?
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny. You can't see this because, like, everybody's got... So, like, my family, on my mom's side, everyone has a curvature in their pinky fingers. And everyone, if, like, everyone on my mom's side of the family, if you hold up all their hands, their pinky fingers all turn inwards at the top.
Huh. See this?
Yeah. Crazy.
So, maybe that is true.
Maybe that's the thing.
It's pretty...
It's a crazy world out there, guys.
Isn't it just? I think I've heard bones in the hands. If anybody else has a thing that they know is fully unique.
Yeah, I'd like to hear some of those.
You have anything on the top of your head?
I don't know. No, I genuinely don't.
It's a question for a science person.
It is, not, which not I'm a, not. Not a sports podcast.
Here's a good one. What's the best TV show theme?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of factors to that.
Yeah but what genre are we going for here? Like,
that's
anything
it, right?
You want. Anything you want. Ooh. My pick is Cheers.
Cheers is a classic, but because again,
it's a singable.
Like
a, yeah, it's a singable song.
And that, but then there's themes that just like suit the show. Like you could either do like the Sopranos theme or the 6 Feet Under theme, totally. Which are very.
I'm gonna stick with Cheers.
Iconic.
Yeah, well,
I think
you know,
Cheers checks all those boxes perfectly, as well as is a good song on its own merit.
You know what? I'm gonna go more recent, and I'm surprised I'm saying it, but the Game of Thrones theme
I was just thinking
is so iconic now.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much, when that show came out, and it was a complete gamble, and no one knew what the hell it was going to be, except people who read the books, I guess.
Sure.
But for the unwashed masses like myself, that theme kicked in. You're like, okay, I see what we're doing here a little
apart
bit.
From season 8.
Well, yeah.
But we're all, everybody in this room, apart from our good friend Dylan, we're all born in the 80s, correct?
Correct. Yes.
We grew up in a time of... transcendent.
Agreed.
Actual songs.
Agreed. Actual songs. And like I'm thinking about even like
Friends.
Like even the DuckTales theme. Like,
yeah. Oh, that's a great.
Like, hear Sean wooing from the other room.
Or like, you know, come on, even like, you know, reboot or mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so like, so
it's true.
So there are like, there's a plethora. This is such a difficult.
You're right.
Such a difficult question.
Ninja Turtles also iconic. I give credence to any song that wrote custom lyrics around the plot of the show.
Oh, 100%.
Like the Turtles. That goes a long way.
Yeah.
Full House also was a contender. My fiance brought up.
That song gets...
when I pre-read this question.
I always get a different song. I get...
Family Matters, probably.
No, I get...
Family Matters. Oh, yeah.
Together Again by Janet Jackson stuck in my head whenever I hear the Full House theme. Because the lyrics are sort of a similar timbre and kind of go into each other for me because my brain's insane.
How about Perfect Strangers?
I don't know if I know the Perfect Strangers theme song.
I'm trying to... I remember bits and parts of it, but...
Yeah, the Full House.
TGIF Friday, man. Every theme in that.
You got to.
Yeah.
The everywhere. You
know, and then must see TV on Thursday. We all know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the best Weird Al song? Ooh. Amish Paradise was pretty good.
Yeah, it was very good.
I'm going deeper.
Going deep cut.
I think Albuquerque is the best Weird Al song. Sean's mad about it. I can tell already. Just 12 minutes of ranting.
Sean's going to yell at us as soon as we get out of this.
Sean has the hottest Weird Al takes. Sean, can you get on? What is your top Weird Al song? Because you're the Weird Al guy.
Yeah. You're basically weird, Sean.
I still might go with Jurassic Park, like just because it was so iconic for the time.
It's fair.
It was Alapalooza, great.
Over something like breaking, like a Dare to Be Stupid level, would you not go
there? I was
going
to go Dare to Be Stupid, but... I don't know, like, there's so many iconic songs I could go on about, but I think Amish Paradise is my favorite. Once again, that's the one that I do karaoke for. So.
I think Amish Paradise is sort of the, like, if someone's like, play me a Weird Al song,
yes.
It would be Amish Paradise.
Right.
The Michael Jackson one about Eat It? Eat It was good too.
Eat It was good.
That's a classic. Like, this is Weird Al writ large.
Props to Weird Al for not playing Michael Jackson songs live anymore.
The man has a code. You got to give it to. You got to give Weird Al credit for that.
There's a great Weird Al song on the album that came out a few years ago called Skipper Dan. It's one of his originals. Mm. It's just a very sad song about a man, and it's love his wheelhouse, but
he goes deep, eh?
Yeah, it's excellent.
Wow.
Okay, you have to choose one: never going north of college or never going south of college. Now that I'm 30. I would prefer to stay north, which is strange because I would have not gone north for years prior to that.
Yeah, so this is difficult for me. I now live north of college, so I feel like I have to pick
one. I live south of college. I've grew up north of college, far north of college. I'll go south of college because, you know, I know how to move around the city well.
And better looking than us.
Are we including college?
I wasn't. No, that's
you,
sorry,
can, hang,
I wasn't
you
saying.
Can hang out on King Street. Not be out of place.
Different shirts look good on you.
Are we including college?
I think College Street. You can stay on the north side of College Street.
So it's literally like just split
college.
Down
the middle. The driving lane is the divide.
Because here's the thing: south of college is most of things to do.
Right.
Not necessarily bars or restaurants, but
that's a great way
sports
to put it.
Stadiums,
right.
Movie theaters.
Right.
Predominant, not all of them, but predominantly a south of college feature. However, north of college is just nice.
It's places to live or north. Yeah. Gets more affordable the farther north you go on
that
college.
Too.
Yeah.
And also, if we're talking just like amount of things, there's a lot more to the north of college than there is to the south of college just by geography.
Yeah. United States is south of college.
I also want to know, too, what's the parameter, although this is not within
like
the context.
East-west?
What's within the context of the question?
I assume
here,
because it's Toronto, it's like Yonge Street to Ossington.
Yeah, fair.
It's just Toronto.
Yeah.
Why would you ever go west of Ossington?
Yeah. Why would you really go east of Yonge? Yeah.
You know what? I went to Ryerson for my graduate degree, and I had friends around me who would stay in their square like 3-4 blocks and refused to move south, east, west, wouldn't go.
I've lived in Toronto for almost my entire life, except when I went to university, and I grew up in the East End and like whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I lived for years at Queen Dovercourt.
Oh yeah.
And never left my neighborhood ever. And I was like, would never go north of, you know, college, wouldn't go west of, I guess, Lansdowne, wouldn't go east of like Ossington. And now that I'm still downtown, but it's like,
see, I grew up in York Region, and I like loved walking everywhere. So like I'll go walk, and like I would tell my, what are you, crazy? Like I'll go, that would seem so claustrophobic for me, but I get it. I mean, you know, when you're on Roncesvalles, right? You live in Roncesvalles.
I live there for a year too.
Yeah. So you don't want to move off Roncesvalles.
I get it. Everything's so far.
I'd like to point out, we are both south of college and east of Young right now. Which sport is the most fun to play in a video game?
Depends on the video game.
It might. That's the whole question.
But I mean, like, no, because like I would never play a football video game, but NFL Blitz is the best.
Oh, NFL Blitz.
So is your answer football?
No, because John, I don't have the patience for football video games.
I still think.
Right, so that's basically the question.
I think I'm going soccer.
I was going to say it might be soccer.
And I'm saying this because Sean can hear every word I'm saying. I love playing FIFA and destroying Tottenham because.
Oh, boy.
Oof.
Because Tottenham.
Here we go.
Thanks for nothing, Sean. Thanks for nothing.
You're a United boy, aren't you?
We're not going to talk about
that. Want to talk about the signings this year?
I'm not talking about that. I don't want to talk about it.
We're smug now. We made one signing. We're like, signings.
I can't. I don't want to talk about it. FIFA, great.
I do think
Tottenham, even better.
I do think FIFA is the pinnacle of like, it's the one that has made the transition to like modern video games where it's like, it's still fun.
Yeah, but the thing about FIFA that was so, that they would try and they still do again and again to complicate it. Like mm-hmm. I remember when you could do like the free kicks with like both toggle buttons on, and I'm using the PS controller, and like you could do a perfect, like just a perfect in swinging kick. And now it's like press this button and that button. And
I'm bad at it, but I still think it's fun.
And you know what? I played it way too much in my mid 20s, and I would go online, and I'm much calmer now that I don't do that anymore because I'm not getting my ass handed to me by 11-year-olds from like Los Angeles, like, and just screaming obscenities at me through my TV.
I feel like we need like some fringe sport video games to like, I think those would be fun. Like give me a European handball video game. I feel like that'd be a fucking blast.
That's what water polo.
Yeah. Like I could see that being fun.
How about actual polo? Like on a horse?
Actual polo. Yeah.
All right, guys. Back on the rails here.
Polo 2017. What year is it? I don't know.
Boy, here's a really deep question about the Tour de France.
Oh, this is from Aaron for sure.
Would you wear a green sprinter jersey or a polka dot climber jersey? I'd be a climber.
What is the color of the jersey for the person who doesn't know how to ride a bike? Because that's the one I will be wearing. Audience member?
They're usually the ones on the road throwing flags and running onto the road.
That's probably me.
And drinking. I think I go polka dot too. I think I'd, because like.
Yeah, climber. I'm not a sprinter. There's no way.
Because.
Yeah.
And those.
Look at these glutes. That's climbing glutes.
Amen to that, buddy.
Hockey butts.
I couldn't do, because you know those sprinters, once they get to the mountain, they're screwed.
I'm afraid to go fast, so.
I don't ride a bike. I have no answer to this. I don't ride a bike. I have no idea. Probably neither, but maybe a climber. I don't know.
What's the best giveaway you've ever received from a sporting event?
Ooh.
When I was 10, I put my name in a drum at a game at Skydome and won tickets to the 1998 World Series in San Diego.
Holy cow.
Whoa.
That is my, I'll never top it. I'll never even come close to talking.
Because I don't think the Padres will get back into the
World Series. Well, that either, but I'll never win anything like that again in my life.
Wow.
That'll be mine.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Saw games 3 and 4.
Forget mine. I got nothing. I got like a free ball compared mine, to that.
I know. It's sure. Great. It's great.
I'm like an idiot.
Mine hasn't happened yet because every year during the Grey Cup, I always put in for the 50-50. And here's the thing. Whatever you might think about the CFL 364 days of the year, the Grey Cup, the 50-50 draws are close to over $1 million.
Really?
So when I win that one and I'm going to spend, and usually it's in the Western provinces like Alberta, when? Like Alberta, and I will literally put down hundreds just to get all those numbers so I can.
That's a good one. The 50-50 is the dream, right? You just end up in a game and absolutely. It's like, I win money just by being here.
$40,000 for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the optimal time to get to the airport before a flight?
But here, is this with status or without status?
I think
I'm going to go without.
Okay.
Yeah. For everybody, every other person, I'm going to go with without.
Okay.
Depends where you're going. Domestic flight, like an hour and a half.
For me, I need to get there early because I need to have a few drinks with me because I hate flying so much.
Really?
Yeah. I just, it's developed over time. I didn't used to when I was a kid. I don't know what it is. There hasn't been like an incident to cause it. I just fucking hate it. And I just need to get like 3 or 4 beers in me before I get
there. I fly too much. And my girlfriend also flies way too much. And we kind of have a system where it's like she gets there super early and I'm always the one who's just like sliding in just right on time.
You got status.
But if I didn't, I probably would continue that terrible trend of just like, okay, well, you know, for, you know, international flights, you have to have your bags in like 1 second to an hour before or you're screwed. And I think it's 45 minutes for domestic. So I'd be the guy just in the line, like right at 45 minutes, just saddling in, just going, here's my bag. Right. I would get burned a ton.
Other than one trip, like 2.5 years ago, it's been so long since I've flown anything but Porter.
Yeah.
And so I'm just used to that. Like,
yeah,
Porter's get to the lounge, have a beer, get on the plane.
Porter's nice. I thought it was kind of just a bit of a puddle hopper and
yeah. And you don't do customs on this side.
Yeah, exactly.
For Pearson, I'm like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, maybe 3. Depending on where I'm going. Which team has the most punchable fans? Oh boy.
If you're doing multiple sports, pick multiple cities.
Oh, Boston, writ large.
Boston for sure.
The end.
I'm going to say it because I'm a New York Jets fan. New York Jets fans. There you go. I have been to New Jersey and the Meadowlands to watch several New York, and I've been to Buffalo to watch them play the New York Jets. And by far, I walk around with Jets fans and I'm like, why did I pick this team?
Let's be honest. Like a lot of Toronto fans.
Maple Leafs are on there. Maple
Leafs are definitely up there.
Mitch Marner thing is... all the worst nightmares about the fan base come true.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we're going overall, it has to be Boston.
We have one last one. Speaking of hating or liking teams.
Yes.
The U.S. Women's National Team, your World Cup champions, are they likable or hateable?
I think they're kind of likable.
Yeah, I know.
They make all the right people angry.
Yes.
They back up all their talk.
It's one of those ones where you pick a side and you look at who's on your side and you're like,
Yeah, exactly. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. But they back it up.
Yeah.
If they were these brash talking, they crashed out against France, it'd be like, okay, fine. But
here's a thought. This is going to lead into my answer. Imagine if Christine Sinclair played on the American women's team, how many goals she would have.
Yeah.
Like, and this is what always will disappoint me. The Americans talk a big game. They back it up. They want you to hate them. And they play with such passion and they mentally are always locked in. And our team has yet to do that. And that's why when I was working for a newspaper during the last Women's World Cup, I wanted to, or two World Cups ago, Abby Wambach was my girl. Like she'd walk into any situation. Yeah, I'm going to score on you. Who cares? Like, and so, you know, I mean, some of the, you know, the celebrations were excessive for, you know, scoring 13 on Thailand and sure, you know, maybe a pinky up. You know,
that was pretty awesome.
That was great. Again, look who it made angry.
Again,
it's like, oh, Piers Morgan got pissed off. Maybe it's a good thing.
But the point is, they come out and they tell you they're going to kick your ass.
Yep.
And then they kick your ass.
Yeah.
And you can do nothing but respect a team
like that. Here's the thing: when you win back-to-back World Cups, you can kind of say whatever you want.
100%.
Yeah, we won't catch me badmouthing Megan Rapinoe.
No, She's awesome.
She'd come to my house and insult me in my face.
Absolutely. Like, well, and she would. And you'd be like, thank you.
I was wrong.
Fair.
Thank you very much. That's it. We have one last thing to do, and that is to dig up the deepest, darkest, sad, not sad. Coming up after this. We're back. One last thing to do. It's the flagship part of the show, available for purchase. Sad Not Sad is here. Matt, you were really excited, so we're going to let you go first. Are you sad or not sad?
I am not sad.
And why is that?
Because Drag Race is coming to Canada.
Yeah.
And it's like, so my girlfriend and I will sit and just devour episodes on Netflix.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And she's going to be upset that I said this, but my girlfriend gets so invested into it. And just like the characters.
Oh, man.
Like,
it's the best.
Tears and
100%.
Like, absolutely. And me, I'm shouting at like when at eliminations.
Absolutely. I know Zoobs isn't
You're
finished
among
yet,
friends.
But like
Don't
we,
worry.
The last season, I can't remember what episode it was, but like, no, it was in All Stars 4. And I won't do spoilers, but we got home from the bar and watched one of the episodes and we were like on our feet. Like hands behind the head, like you'd watch a basketball game, like just like tense and wait. It's the best. It's the best.
The season 9 finale is still one of
my favorite.
My favorite. Like the lip sync.
You're mid-season, yeah. But, oh, it's the best. I know exactly what you're talking about.
The lip sync is just like
it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean that's what the show is all about.
It is. Yeah. I'm excited for the UK one. I'm excited for the Canada one. Give me all of it. Just give me all of it.
So it's and you know the great thing about Drag Race is that it speaks to, even though you think it's one particular set, it speaks to everybody.
Like absolutely
you can, everybody,
yeah.
Everybody can get behind it. And it's great because of all, and I was just actually saying this to my girlfriend last night, of all of the reality shows, this one actually has like a substantial payoff. Like
100%.
You actually get to learn and understand and appreciate the psychology of people from different situations and different backgrounds and still be able to laugh at them being catty at each other, still be able to go ahead and get upset at characters who like clearly, again, as the question has always been throughout the show, if you do not know how to sew, how are you on this show?
First episode of every season. What? Yeah. And like, I agree with you. I think there are things about that show probably that are not for me to say or comment on or know, which is fine, but it does create understanding and education and all that, and it's great.
And there's a whole generation of young boys and young people in the LGBTQ2+ community. You know, people want to go ahead and they strive to be in sports or they strive to be in certain areas of life. Now people can strive to be on a show like this, and there's a great redemptive and there's a great payoff quality to it that is makes it just an awesome show.
Absolutely.
Do you gravitate towards pageant girls or comedy queens?
Oh, comedy queens, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very hard to be a comedy queen.
It's. I think. Well, it's, let's be clear.
It's all very hard. It's all very hard.
I'm forgetting the name off the top of my head. Who won season 6? Who was it?
Bianca
Del Rio.
Oh. She would just, and what was great is that there were so many layers to her story. Like you just thought that she was a jerk.
Yeah.
And then the way that, you know, he was mentoring other queens around him was just at the end. It was like, that's,
I think that was my favorite season so far.
I think it's up there.
There was the perfect amount of shit talk and then genuine connection between the queens where they were like helping each other.
And like the top were like very good.
Excellent top three. Anyway, great, great, great answer, Matt.
Yes.
Jake, are you sad/not sad?
I'm not sad. I've been trying to not bite my nails for the last few years for some of my life. I've bitten my nails since I was 0 years old, I guess. And it's going okay. I've learned that when you bite your nails for 30 years and they grow, they're weak as shit.
Huh.
And so they crack at... I was playing softball last night and like threw a ball and it kind of hit my nail and it fucking broke. But it's like...
You have the Aaron Sanchez.
I do, yeah.
Next time you insult Aaron Sanchez.
I understand. But yeah, it's a work in progress and they look stupid right now because like the non-cuticle part of the nail has to actually grow. But I'm like, I've been able to stick with it for a couple weeks and, you know, it's not quite like quitting smoking, but it is a habit. And so I'm on the way, I think, maybe. Or in like a week, I'll watch a movie that's tense and bite them all off and then it doesn't matter.
Willpower. Come on now.
You can do it.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
Boy, I feel like I'm tough act to follow. I'm not sad, but just a general It felt like getting that Kawhi news out of the way, even though it didn't break the Raptors' way. It really felt like there was a tension that everyone is like released from now.
Yeah. I was at a friend's birthday just on Friday, just like checking.
The last week was absurd. It was just like, I was aware that
it was absurd for you. I had to sit outside a hotel for 8 hours.
I can only imagine. Like, it was truly the most absurd thing I've ever seen this city and country get involved in sports.
Yeah. Which is saying
something, right? We've seen some absurd stuff, but it was like, there was a point where I was like, okay, I don't care where he signs. Just end this. This is too much. And it's over. And, you know, it feels like summer is finally here. I feel like I can go outside and have to worry about
news breaking anytime.
Yeah. And of course it fucking breaks at 3 a.m. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's over now.
Woj bombs.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Well, the trade happened at 4, so.
Yeah, man. Paul George too. Crazy.
Still NBA champions.
Crazy. Anyway, Raptors are champions. You're defending, reigning NBA champions, Toronto Raptors. That is it for the show. Matt, thank you very much for coming in.
That was
thanks, boys. This was awesome.
We'll be back next week. We're going to talk about Raptors, Leafs, All-Star, maybe Drag Race. Obviously Drag Race.
Because you
see that walk.
We will have Drag Race next week because you're still going
through. I'll be almost done, right?
That's right.
I'll be almost caught up because in a week, I've watched 7 seasons.
Yeah, you'll be done by next week.
Matt, thank you again for coming in. Follow Matt on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you, Dylan, Clay, and Sean, everyone involved.
Yeah.
Clay produced this. He put his own Clay. Thank you to me at the bottom. He says,
"Oh, and thank you." That's right. Well, that's nice.
Thank you, Dylan, especially.
Yes, always. Dylan,
thanks, Dylan,
for actually doing work. And thank you all very much for listening to Sportsfeld.
Sportsfeld.